The following programming is sponsored by 6 Feet Over Under Productions. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by Elec 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM and 97.5 HD2, part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend talking about all the news in the world of sports.
There is none.
Quiet week, Jeff, right?
Nothing's happened.
Not much going on?
Nope.
Did we get somebody?
Basketball.
Did we get somebody good to break down what the heck happened yesterday?
I don't know. Did we?
I think we did. Do you want to ask him the most pertinent question and introduce him?
Oh, you
him?
Think this guy knows anything about the Sixers?
Well, why don't you introduce him so people know we're talking about?
All right. I think we have on the line Keith Pompey, master of breaking stories from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Keith, how you doing? Are you tired?
No, I got another story to break.
Oh, what? Oh, I have a. You know what? I'm really regretting saying this. But what's the story?
He did ask what, Keith.
Oh, no, I want to be nice.
Michigan won yesterday.
Leave me alone.
Jeff got all right, excited
so
for a second.
I do have, and I posted something to you, which you ignored, unless you're really working on the story, which is. The untold story of this is what happens to the remaining meat pies at the Wells Fargo Center. Do they get shipped to Brooklyn?
You know what? It's funny. Remember those people? I don't know if you noticed, but they haven't been serving meat pies all season.
Yeah, they were out of them. They sold those.
They still have them on the menu, but apparently we've tried, and then they don't have them in stock.
All right, so we'll see if the meat pies end up in Boston or in Brooklyn, but we know that Ben Simmons is going to end up there. Take us through how this all happened the last couple days.
You know, it's one of those things where, you know, these people have been talking for a while through back channels to the point where a lot of people were saying tampering, you know. But it just seems like, you know, James publicly – and not publicly, but to his teammates for a while, was saying, oh, I like it here. I love it here. But behind closed doors, he was telling his friends, the other people, he wanted out. And I think, like, what happens is, you know, Michael Rubin, who's a good friend of his, a co-owner of the Sixers, you know, basically, you know, helped negotiate to get him out in a way. You know, him and other people. Now, of course, people are going to say, no, that's not true, yada, yada. But, you know, from what I heard that, you know, Michael Rubin was a player in it, and you know, in regards to helping out with things on the back channels and all this other stuff. So, that's how it really happened. But it's weird because you look at it, and Brooklyn is coming out. They're saying nothing's going on. We want to keep them. But then all of a sudden, they start saying, you know, it's one of those, well, we really want to keep them. But if you really want to give them up, you know, it's one of those things where you're going to have to give us a lot. So from looking at it right now, that Brooklyn won the trade, you know, just by looking at it now, but you never know what's going to happen, and you never know how trades really pan out until like months or even a season down the line.
Look, it, in my line of work when I'm not doing this, in negotiating things, there's always – every side always thinks they gave up too much. But if you look at what they gave up, I mean, start with Andre Drummond. It was great to have him as a backup center, but do people forget what Joel Embiid did to Andre Drummond when he was on the other side of the court? Would you not want him in the game in the playoffs as the Nets center?
Yeah, but I, you know what? I think it's not quite you know, what Joel can do to him. It's kind of like what he can do while he's playing next to, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie.
Right.
You know, I think that, you know, when we look at it, you know, we're talking about head to head. I mean, I look at a team. Now, again, I'm not saying that this who won or lost the trade. I'm just saying I look at this Brooklyn Nets team, and now they have four All-Stars in the starting lineup. You have Ben Simmons. You know, Drummond was a three-time All-Star. And you have perennial All-Stars in Kyrie and KD, and then you have the sharpshooter who's going to take the place of Joe Harris. So when you factor in that you got rid of a guy who didn't want to be there, a guy who was struggling this season for you, and you're able to bring in two all-stars in the sharpshooter form, you know, I think that people in Brooklyn are extremely happy, just like some people in Philadelphia are extremely happy that they were able to get a perennial all-NBA player in James Harden.
All right, so when should we expect to see, with their new numbers, both of them, Ben Simmons and James Harden, on the respective courts?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, that's a great question. You know, I think with Ben, it's going to take a little while. You know, he's going to have to practice. He's going to have to do some things to show them, like, you know, if he's up to speed condition-wise to play. You know, James, you know, he's coming off of that hamstring injury. And it may take him, you know, some people, I don't expect him to be back. Well, he won't be back at least until Tuesday. And I don't even know if Tuesday's a target date. You know, I'm just coming up here with the speculation. Like, if his hamstring is bad, you know, is tender, and we know how the Sixers are and people like that, I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see him until after the All-Star game. Now, again, this is just me talking, but I wouldn't be surprised, you know.
Okay, well, the person that apparently would be surprised is anybody on the TNT broadcast, because they seem to think that the way they were talking is James Harden's hamstring injury is going to magically go away.
Well, a lot of people are saying that. I mean, a lot of people. They're not the only ones. I mean, you know, I wrote that when sources said to me that, you know, they don't know. They think that it's one of those things where he just didn't want to play, you know. So, again, that's what I'm saying. I really don't know, like, the word around the NBA, everybody's saying he just wanted out. I mean, maybe that could have been it, but, you know, I just, you know, it's a tough situation for me to speak on. But so, that's what people are saying.
So what do you think the starting lineup and rotation is? Is this a Maxi, Harden, Thibault at the three, Tobias Harris at the four, and then Joel at the five? Is that their starting lineup now?
I think that's it right there, unless maybe if you want to get more shooting on the floor, then you might say, okay, Danny Green or Furkan, you know what I mean, and replace a Maxi. But I think, like, Maxi has shown that he is a starter in this league. So, you know, I think that it would be a little, yo, you helped carry us all season. Now you got to go to the bench. I don't know if that's going to work.
Does Matisse, as a great defender, now become more valuable in the starting lineup, though, because you don't need his scoring as much? With Harden in the lineup and Maxi there also in more of a scoring role, does it make sense to keep Matisse in the starting lineup because it provides a little bit of defense and also the opportunity to switch off because Harden isn't exactly the best defender?
It is, but at the same time, I mean, you do, but I also think you also need a shooter in that starting lineup. I mean, I know Tobias Harris can shoot the three. I know that Maxi is shooting 40% from the three, but, you know, to me, a three-point shooter is a guy who can do it, show that they can do it over seasons, not just, you know, have in the midst of having a great season with it. So I think we'll learn a whole lot. I mean, I think that we'll learn a whole lot more about his shot over time. But at the same time, like, I would, you know, I think that you would want to have somebody who's a designated floor spacer. You know, like, to me, you know, right now, if it's me, like, you know, next year, I know you can't do it now, but you got to go out there and get a 3-and-D who's going to actually, you know, be able to do that on a consistent basis. That's what they need. I mean, I get the defense thing, but, you know, you want to get somebody that's going to be able to let that two-man game really work out to the best of its ability.
With the way that these two are going to run the pick and roll, it seems like they're going to live at the line, and they're two good free throw shooters. Am I seeing that wrong, or are we going to go from a guy who didn't really want to shoot free throws to two guys who are literally going to live there and put a lot of points up?
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I see that with you. We're going to see that. But you know what? It's kind of hard. Like, you know what? A lot of people, we always try to, like, predict what's going to happen or say, oh, this and that. I get a little leery of that because I've been, again, this is my ninth season covering the Sixers, and I've seen a lot of things. Like, the biggest thing was the whole Markelle Fultz thing. Now, I know this is completely different, but on paper, yes. But I try not to look into things because I've seen a lot of things go left with this team.
Well, the one thing you're now seeing that has been happening in the last 9 years that you've been covering it is the process is officially dead. Correct? I mean, all that's left now is Joel Embiid from the process.
Yep. And that's why he coined the phrase. That's why he took over the name. He got the trademark, the process.
Though I am seeing some of the process supporters saying, well, the process led you to your two superstars with Harden and Embiid.
Oh.
So that's generally what your process people are saying. Keith, what do you expect to see from this team in terms of Doc? He hasn't liked some of the questions and scrutiny he's gotten this season. I would think this ramps up the pressure on him now that he's going to have those tools to play with in Harden in the lineup. What does this do to Doc?
I mean, I think it, you know, right now, before the pressure was on Daryl Morey to get somebody. Now the pressure is on Doc Rivers to get him out of the second round. You know, so, you know, I think that, you know, the clock just ticked. It's time now. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, some people may say that James, some people, you know, he didn't shoot as well as he did this season as he did in seasons past. But at the same time, you look at it and you have to say to yourself, like, look, right about now, you know, you went out there and you got yourself this perennial all-NBA player, former MVP. You have Joel Embiid playing at an MVP level. So when you have things like that, you look at Doc Rivers and it's like, hey, bruh, you know, we can't go out in the second round. And, you know, it's like one of those, like, we can't do that.
Is that the question you're asking at the next press conference?
Hey, bruh.
Nah.
I can't wait to see his response for that one. I might have to DVR that before you ask it, Keith.
I won't do that.
do you think Morey's done, or do you think that once people start getting cut, that they'll go after a backup center, that they'll see if there's a 3-and-D guy that fits into this? Or do you think, for the most part,
I mean,
we're now seeing the roster?
They have an available roster spot now, and they're looking for a backup center in the buyout market, you know, whatever they can get. But I do think that we'll see some more. Like, it's one thing people don't realize, like guys like B-Ball Paul, Charles Bassey, Isaiah Joe, they're all like on 9 guaranteed deals next year, right?
Right.
And you look at a guy like Shake Milton, where they have a team option. I mean, Shake hasn't played in like 2 months, right? So I'm saying this to say, like, a lot of the changes could come next season. I mean, come over the summer. Now, again, right now, you know, last year we all thought like, okay, they were going to upgrade in the buyout market. They couldn't get anybody last year in the buyout market. I don't really see, you know, you got Tristan Thompson, you know, maybe, you know, but I don't see a lot of guys in the buyout market that could really, say, help this team right now in regards to a backup center, you know, at least not to the level of the guy that they had. So with that being said, it's like, yeah, you can try, but, you know, you got to be a little bit fortunate because there's going to be other people taking and picking them up, and they may say, look, you go somewhere else, you're going to get more shots, you're going to get more minutes, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. So, you know, it's tougher than it seems.
So you mentioned somebody that actually is interesting to me, which is Shake Milton. What's the latest on Shake, and is he going to come back?
I'm sorry. I don't have it. I don't have it. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things that, it's like top secret. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
All right. Well, then I'll ask this question. What's your prediction for the Super Bowl?
That's where we got to go. That's where I was wondering.
You know, do they have any Michigan guys in the Super Bowl?
I knew there was going to be an angle there. There is a Rutgers guy in the Super Bowl, Keith. I know that.
Who does he play for?
The Rams, Sebastian Joseph Day. We've had him on the show before. Good dude. Has a cooking show also.
But he's not playing.
That's a shame. They're going to lose.
The Rams going to lose?
I'm going with the Bengals.
Yeah,
hold
score?
I'm going with the Bengals.
What's the score?
I really wanted the Rams to win, but now they just got cursed with that Rutgers dude. Hey, man.
Keith, we have the prop bet guy on later, and we were talking about there's a prop bet you can bet on whether somebody does the Icky Woods celebration. So lot you can go with during that game.
Nah, man, I'm disappointed. There's a Rutgers dude on that team.
Yeah, I hate to break it to you, man. We occasionally get a guy that wins the Super Bowl.
Is he a kicker?
No, he's a defensive lineman, and he plays pretty good. He's next to Aaron Donald. He won't play in the game.
Hold up. He says next to Aaron Donald.
Yeah, he's not Aaron Donald. Don't worry.
So Aaron Donald is carrying him, huh?
Oh, I'll let you That's take it up with on. Him. I'm not going to fight that argument.
No, you got to have a pit man, like make it easy for the other guy.
Look at him. Spread those peacock feathers. All of a sudden, Pitt comes out of nowhere.
The next time that he comes on the show, I'll let him know that you'd like to talk to him about what he does.
We're
going to
do that. We're going to do that in studio.
You know what? But I bet you, look, the money that he's making, I bet you he knows the Pitt fight song because that's where he's paid by playing
the We will leave it there. Keith Pompey, congratulations on the conclusion of the Ben Simmons circus trade era version. Good luck in the James Harden is here version. We look forward to following you at Pompey on Sixers, reading you in the Inquirer. Take care of yourself, man.
All right, and one thing I will say the thing about Shake, I just want to say this. I hope I'll mess with the commercial break. The thing about Shake is just that he's been having a hard time. Like right about now, he's starting to do some on court stuff. So you know what I mean? It's taking a little longer than I expected, but you know it's one of those things where he was a ways away, so I don't know if he's doing 5-on-5 scrimmages, but he is doing on court stuff.
We'll get the latest on your Twitter feed and the paper. Right. Thanks for keeping it up, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, hell to Pit.
There you go. All right, Jeff. So do you?
It always comes back around. It's either taking a shot at Michigan or
Michigan
or Pitt.
And Pitt. Any thoughts before we head to the break on anything Keith said?
I just want people to understand that it's not. We always think we gave up too much. I'm not telling you we didn't. I'm telling you it's an overreaction to say that now because you don't know.
We will have to see what it ends up being and whether this works out. Why don't we hit the break? When we come back, we'll have new Temple football coach Stan Drayton. Stick with us.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.
It is so great to get a few minutes to talk with the new head coach of Temple University football, Stan Drayton. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing phenomenal. Doing great. Great to be here now. How about you guys?
We're doing great, Coach.
Good.
So as somebody who spent a little time out in Western Pennsylvania, we wanted to start with your college days. You started at Allegheny College, and the question that we got to ask you at first is, why Bottle Rocket?
Oh, where does that nickname come from?
You guys went deep in a hurry, didn't you?
We do our research here, Coach. We try to be prepared for you.
Yeah, I try to keep that a secret, but it's out there. So that name came with, and a lot of the younger guys will not even remember this person, but the Rocket Ishmael, remember him?
Yeah, I do. Unfortunately,
Jeff,
as a Michigan grad, I remember him very well.
Yeah, you should. But no, I was a track athlete along with a football athlete as well. And during the track season indoor, we ran against Notre Dame at an indoor track meet. And the big buildup to that particular meet was the Rocket Ishmael was set to break the all-time 60-meter dash record, right? And so, ironically so, and I just so happened to be in the lane right next to the Rocket Ishmael. And so, first opportunity goes out. I'm nervous, as you can imagine. And Division III athlete around all these Division I athletes, and boom, the gun goes off, and boom, the second gun goes off and there's a false start. And I'm sitting here thinking, looking around side to side, I'm ahead of the whole field. I'm like, man, that was me. I must have just false started. And it wasn't. It was a guy that was two lanes over, and we had to restart the whole deal over. And so here we go the second time around. Bow, the gun goes off and I'm in the lead. And I'm like, holy crap. I'm actually beating the Rocket Ishmael for about 15 meters. And all of a sudden a flash just comes flying past me, and there's the Rocket. He goes, and I ended up placing third in that meet amongst a bunch of Division I athletes, and actually PR'd and broke Allegheny's record at that time. And so the head football coach, Ken O'Keefe, who was at the meet, just kind of supporting me, gave me the name. Hey, I mean, you were right there with the guy, so I'm gonna start calling you the Bottle Rocket. And man, I have not been able to live that nickname down. I tried to reject it in that moment, but it just kind of just took off. So
unsuccessful in that. You know, you mentioned the track effort, and we like to talk to people about sports specialization. You're somebody who was a two-sport star, who won honors and awards. Could you speak to how playing multiple sports helped to shape you as opposed to just specializing in one?
Well, I'll tell you what, it was a direct correlation of, you know, enhancing my ability to run in open space and, you know, pull away from people, become more explosive in that respect. It really made me a better football player. But quite honestly, it was a way for me to stay busy. You know, at that time, I wasn't a very mature person, and I needed activity in my life. So, you know, track and field actually kept me busy during the off season, kept me in great shape for the football season to come. You know, so I just thought it was an awesome correlation for me for both sports to be in my life. And plus, I come from a track background. People don't know. I have Olympic gold in my family, a guy by the name of Paul Otis Drayton, who actually ran at Villanova University. And, you know, he won Olympic gold at the Tokyo Olympics. I don't want to get this year wrong, 64, 68, one of those years. He actually tried to get my family, my dad, not to let me play football and to kind of focus in on track. So I was actually a track athlete before football, but I love football too much and tried to find a way to put both of them in my life.
As you look back on your younger self, you mentioned your younger self before and having to grow. Was there a point at which, while you were even in college, that you said someday this is what you wanted to do?
You know what? Not necessarily in college. You know, while in college, I was, you know, an English major, thought I was going to go into law. I actually spent the year as a GA studying for the LSAT, you know, so I had this thought, and really that thought process was planted into my head by my parents. You know, hey, go be a lawyer, go be a doctor. Those were the common things you heard growing up, right?
Don't do it.
Jeff's a lawyer, so
I'm and a lawyer. I thought about you made the right call.
I thought about it and decided it was not for me too. So go on.
I'll tell you what. I really had, I mean, I spent all my summers in Washington, D.C., the whole deal, you know, just trying to figure out that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, the funny story for that is, you know, I finally get to the LSAT. Took me about 20 minutes to answer the first question. I'm like, you know what? This ain't for me. You know, and I got up and walked out of that deal and I had to try to figure it out. And it was Ken O'Keefe and Joe Philbin, who are my head football coach, my offensive coordinator, Allegheny, who told me, hey, you're a coach. You may not know it. You may not, you know, feel it right now, but that's who you are. You've always been a leader on the field with the teammates. You always held them accountable. That's what you are. My parents did not want to hear that, but I'm glad I didn't listen at that point. I finally got mature enough to make my own mind up and became a coach.
And you make your mind up, and you're somebody who's had experiences at the pro level and the college level. You've worked at Power Five schools. You've worked under some of the biggest name coaches out there. Talk about how you developed your own coaching philosophy, how you took pieces of who you've worked with to become the man that you are that's now going to lead Temple House.
Yeah, again, going back to those same two names, Ken O'Keefe and Joe Philbin, I had a great experience at Allegheny. We won a national championship there as a football player. And, you know, it was all about teamwork, holding each other accountable. Those were things that were just instilled in us, being a player-led football team, not having the coaches, you know, always leading us as football players. Those were the things that were instilled in me at Allegheny. And then, obviously, had the opportunity to kind of get around people like Urban Meyer, who forced alignment from the top down to the bottom. You know, people like, you know, Jim Tressel, who also taught everybody about loyalty, you know, being loyal to each other, holding each other accountable. It was just a combination of those same, you know, common threads that kept, you know, seeping into my being. And I just kind of just took it in. You know, the one thing I always brought to the table was a work ethic and high energy. And then when I was able to put some organization, some real theory that I was able to live through myself as a football player to work, it developed who I was and who I became as a coach. And, you know, then the thought process of maybe, you know, taking these, you know, these tools and being able to run your old program. you know, because not everything you learn from those guys, and nothing against those guys, really fit, who I was all the way as a person. I had some my own opinions and my own thoughts about how things should be run. I saw some of the mistakes that they ran, that they had in developing those football teams, and thought that, hey, maybe one day I can create this thing and do it my way. And that became a real thing. Obviously, the last 17 years of my career got real hungry for that. And so when this opportunity came about, man, it's been phenomenal for me to be able to kind of put those pieces together and do it my way for the first time. So,
you know, we talked to a lot of college football and basketball coaches, including your colleague at the Temple, Aaron McKee, and they talk about the importance of what you are doing, not just on the football field, but off the football field. And that starts with developing a level of trust with not only the student athlete, but their family. How did you develop your style as far as how you do recruiting? I mean, you're somebody that, I mean, we'll get into it in a minute, that has recruited some of the biggest names in college football over the years at different places you've been, including our beloved Mr. Westbrook. And so how do you do that? How do you develop that style, and how do you continue to just be yourself when you have to do that?
You listen and you learn, right? A lot of coaches, you know, go into the home or approach an athlete and they sell them on, hey, I promise you I can get you to the NFL, and I promise you that you will start. You know, I promise you this and I promise you that. There's a lot of false promises that go on in the recruiting process. And, you know, I thought that was all, you know, for lack of a better term right now, all BS, you know. I think that if you just keep it real with the individual, let them know that, hey, this is how hard it's going to be to attain those type of goals. And it's not guaranteed. And you have to have a backup plan, you know, which may become your primary plan. And if that's OK, that's OK. You know, if that happens, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, being able to paint a big, real picture, you know, it's amazing, you know, nowadays that just keeping it real with athletes and their families, that is what people, they bite that hook and sinker, you know what I mean? And it's a shame to say that, but, you know, it's just a matter of just keeping reality on the forefront of their mindsets that, hey, you know, what you want is going to take a bunch of hard work, and it's still not going to be guaranteed to you, you know? So let's make sure that we think bigger than football. You know, you got to develop as a man. One day you're going to be, you know, a grown man, whether you like it or not. You're going to be a grown man. You're going to have to deal with grown man consequences. And you might as well figure that out along with this process. Let football do that for you. You know, let these resources that universities provide for you help you develop yourself into a man, a husband, a father, you know, a person that can provide. And not only that, you know, don't be afraid to develop the mindset of, you know, paying forward to a community that's going to one day support you in what you're trying to do. And, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, a style, call it a style if you want. But to me, it's reality. It's what these young men need to know, that life is real out here. So you might as well paint a real picture for them at the front door.
Well, it seems like it's worked for you. I mean, guy names you can list off: Cam Newton, the Pounceys, Bijan Robinson. I want to ask about Brian Westbrook. He's one of our favorites here. And
one of mine, too.
Is it true that Andy Talley asked you if you're willing to put your job on the table for him?
Oh, and I'm talking about my first Division I scholarship recruiting job that I've ever had as a coach. You know, Andy Talley says, hey, you know, there's not enough film on this guy. You know, I've never taken a running back off of basketball film. You know, I've never taken a running back with a hip that's blown out right now. So, you know, for me to sit there and believe you as a recruiter, you know, you have to be able to stand on the table and say, yes, you're willing to put your job on the line for this young man. And I would be lying to you guys if I sit there and say, hey, I was gung-ho about that. You know, I had to think about that. You know, I'm like, whoa, this is kind of heavy. Like, I wasn't really anticipating this type of conversation, you know, recruiting that guy for the first time. But no, it was the mindset that Brian Westbrook had in spite of all the diversity that he was going through. It was the chip on his shoulder that he had as universities, big universities, were dropping him off of their recruiting boards. And Westbrook has something to prove. And it took, you know, one layup line at a basketball game at the Matha where he looks at me in the stands and just flushes the ball fresh off of hip surgery. I'm like, you know what? This kid's got something to prove. And it kind of reminded me of myself to some degree. Now, I'm not saying I was the athlete that Brian Westbrook was by any stretch, but that chip that he had on his shoulder is something that I had coming out of the inner city of Cleveland. And it reminded me a lot of myself. So, Brian Westbrook made me believe in him. And so I was willing to stand on the table because of how he felt about himself and what he was ready to prove.
You know, you mentioned that part of being a student athlete is becoming an adult and becoming part of your own community. And so, you know, when we talk to especially people from Temple, how important community is and how important giving back is and using that platform is. How important is that for you to give back to the community and to use the platform that you now have to benefit the community around you?
Well, especially here in North Philly, you know, we're a neighborhood school, call it what you want. And we're surrounded by people who have been here longer than the university has been here, you know. So I think it's critically important to build those relationships to let them know that, you know, hey, we're just leasing your area, but we want you to be involved in something that we're building here that is great. And hopefully that what we do when we do build it the way we want it to be built, that you also could benefit from that, you know, as a community. And not only that, it's awesome for the development of the young man, you know, who has all these selfish goals, right? They want this for themselves. They want that for themselves, but they don't realize that they can't get anything they want from themselves unless they have help. You know, they can't do it by themselves. So it develops the whole man, just the mindset to be able to give back. And it just makes you feel good too, right? It keeps you on humble ground. You know, you get people supporting you, you know, when we're sitting here blasting music, you know, on the practice fields, you know, during the early hours of the morning, the people understand that, hey, you know, we got their back. And not only that, we're trying to, you know, go out here and attain something as a football program, but we're really trying to build this neighborhood up, build you up, give you a sense of pride, you know, along the way. So I think it's critically important to the development of the man, for sure.
You know, you yourself are a trailblazer. You're only the second black coach that Temple's had with Ron Dickerson. And given what's going on in the national climate, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask about your own journey. Can you talk about some of the challenges, but also some of the successes that helped you to get here as we all try to examine how we change this process to have more black coaches like you have the opportunity to succeed?
Yeah, it's a hot topic, you know. You know, despite the perceptions, right? You know, when you look at the percentages don't lie. There are a lot of African Americans that play this sport at a high level. And if you do the ratio between that of which, African American head coaches that are coaching them, I mean, it's very lopsided. So, you know, the one thing that as a young coach that I found out early is, you know, we're needed when it's time to go out and recruit and relate to these athletes, right? You know, it's needed. We're needed when, you know, you have them in their programs and you're dealing with an issue and you may be that one guy that can relate to kind of fix the issue, you know, because you can relate where they're coming from. You can relate the family structure of where they're coming from, you know, but why can't we relate from a head coach's position? You know, so that became, you know, part of the hunger of why I wanted to be in a role like this is to be able to prove to people, again, I guess call it that chip on the shoulder, right? That we can absolutely do everything you're asking us to do and still lead a football team, you know. And I'm undefeated right now. So, you know, it's easy for me to say things like this, but, you know, hey, the one thing that I hope that I am winning is, you know, I am still creating the relationships, the same relationships that I did as a positional coach, and this on a larger scale. I have an opportunity to say, I've been through what you're going through and you can be great. You can really get through these things, you know. And, you know, when you fight the perception of, you know, of what people believe, the competency level of an African-American coach or whatever it is, it just puts a burning in my heart to prove all of that stuff wrong. So it's a hot topic. It's definitely an issue. It's a problem. But the one thing I can say about Temple University is they've always kind of been on the forefront of that. You know, they've always had, you know, in other sports, they've had, you know, African-American coaches take leadership roles and be highly successful. So
I grew up on Coach Chaney. My dad was a Temple guy. Right? I grew up on watching Coach Chaney coach at Temple.
That's exactly right. You know, and those guys take those roles and, you know, their main goal is to sit there and show the world that it can be done and show these kids that it can be done. You know, why hold them to a set standard when you can prove it otherwise? And so this is what this position is. I won't take it for granted.
Coach, we know we really appreciate all your time. We know how much work there is to do, even in the off season that people don't see behind the scenes. But before we let you go, we got to ask. So what style? What should we be looking to see from Temple football under Coach Drayden?
Well, I'm definitely trying, and organically, we'll live under the mantra of Temple tough. You know, seriously, and what that means is being able to endure adverse situations. Not avoid them, take them on, you know, head on, and raise young men. You know, I'm going to coach on the edge. You know, we're going to demand excellence of these young men, you know. So you're going to see a physical style of play for sure. You're going to see, you know, I had an unbelievable challenge by our president, Dr. Wingard. You know, he said, hey, Temple needs to show up on every game. And what does that mean? That means just don't show up, win or loss, and just, you know, play the game humdrum. No, play it with a certain passion, a certain pride, a certain chip on your shoulder, you know, and that's what we're going to be. We're going to play fast, hard, physical football. All right. But we're going to be hard and chasing greatness in every phase of our life. And I think that's a direct correlation, you know, to winning football games, winning championships and winning in life. You know, so, yeah, we're going to be on the edge here. We're going to play with the chip. We're going to execute with a chip on our shoulder. You know, when it's time to say go on the football field, we're going to try to hit people in the mouth, you know, so that's who we are. We're going to try to hit life in the mouth when the game is over. And that's what this is going to be. And so
knowing this and hearing that style of play, how hard is it for you to kind of gauge your time and not look too much forward to August, like when that first game is coming?
Yes. You know, come on, guys. It's, you know, when you're a competitor and you know what's at the end of the tunnel of this thing, yeah, it's very hard. But this job puts you on humble ground. There's so much to do before you even get to that point, right? You know, we're in winter conditioning right now. You want a humbling experience, just kind of see where we are physically right now. You know, we got a lot of work to do. Check our mindset. You know, we're not checking all the boxes the right way of how to do things the right way. Yet we have work to do, you know, and that's part of it, man. That's part of the tough mantra is first of all, being able to look yourself in the mirror and see that there is work to do, guys. Right. And being able to attack it willingly every single day, you know, so we're not there yet. You know, we have work to do. We have to develop and create that consistency. And it does require a tough mindset. So, wow. You know.
We look forward to following you build the program and, more importantly, watching you develop men and really put that program in a place that reflects what we're hearing from you in this conversation. We hope we get to talk to you again as you move forward. And thanks so much for the time, Coach.
I appreciate you guys and hope to talk to you guys soon.
Jeff, if I had any skill that I passed on to my child and he was old enough to play football, I would send him to play for Coach Drayden. Now, granted, we have none of those things, but he was a pretty impressive dude.
He's I think everything that Coach Carey really wasn't. I think that Coach Carey did a good job as a coach, but this guy will sell himself and sell this program. As you said, he's the kind of guy that if we had a kid that was coming into our home, he's the kind of guy that I would feel comfortable sending him there, and I think he's going to be successful as a football coach too.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I want to see him succeed. Mm-hmm. He's clearly built himself up the right way to get to where he is. He's somebody who's earned his shot, and I'm glad to see him get it.
Yeah, and I think Temple football is going to be kind of exciting under him.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. Jeff, let's keep the football conversation going here.
All right. With the big game just 2 days away, where you can now bet on just about anything, an estimated 31 million adults are expected to bet in some way on the game. Let's talk about some of your wagering entertainment options. Let's bring on the Prop Bet Guy to help break down some of your options. You can find him on Twitter at Prop Bet Guy. Doug, thanks for a little time today.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
We're so glad to have you. 2 days away from the game, everybody's starting to look at what their options are. In lots of states now, you can make a wager. I've seen there's over like 1,000 prop bets for bettors to wager. Where do people start?
It's a great question, because every year that list just keeps growing and growing when it comes to the Super Bowl. You know, where to start? I mean, you start at the top. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason, you know, really where to go. I mean, I tend to gravitate towards the more quantifiable bets, not necessarily, you know, the fun ones like the coin toss or the anthem or the Gatorade color. I tend to focus on players and player props specifically. So that's usually where I start. There's no rhyme or reason, though, to someone looking to bet on the Super Bowl as to where they should start, though.
What are the bets that are most fun for you to work on?
Yeah, so I mean, my specialty is player props. So my definition of fun is probably a little loose. I'm a numbers guy. I love just digging into matchup data and stats and whatnot. So that's fun for me. I don't know if that's necessarily fun for everyone, but when it comes to the Super Bowl, or honestly just any NFL or NBA or MLB game, I just love, digging into each player's line, analyzing the matchup and kind of going from there.
If you look at the game itself for this year, before we get into individual bets, you've got the Rams as, 3.5 to 4 point favorites. It's sort of become a little more of a Rams line. But then you look at it during the regular season, the Bengals were 5-3 on the road. The Rams were 5-3 at home, and Cincinnati's 13-7 against the spread this year. So how do you look at the game overall if somebody doesn't want to go to an individual bet, but they want to look at taking the game itself?
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be a close game. I know the Rams are technically at home, but I know for a fact, books and bookmakers are not necessarily giving them a huge advantage, because, the Super Bowl tends to be more of a corporate or general type crowd as opposed to like a specific fan base. The Bengals, they've just been plucky all season. They've been gritty. They've had comeback wins. They've had dominant wins. I'm not necessarily thinking they're going to win outright, but the Bengals on the spread seems like the way I personally would lean.
So if we look at some of the in-game prop bets, we'll talk about some of the special stuff afterwards. But I mean, for people who haven't done it, you can bet on everything from the result of the first drive to who will call the first timeout. The thing that I was surprised by that's seems to be in the top 10 this year is the over-under on Evan McPherson's field goals. How often do we see a field goal kicker as a top 10 prop bet, and what Cincinnati's rookie kicker, who's never played in a game like this, now is going to have all his money on him?
Yeah, he's been all the rage. I mean, he's made every big field goal that the Bengals have asked of him, throughout the playoffs and the regular season. And he's been money. I mean, those 50-yard field goals have been going through with ease. So I think he's definitely a popular guy when it comes to, looking at individual players and how they're performing. I tend to like the over on his kicking points or field goal props, just because the Rams are pretty bend don't break defense. So I think the Bengals will find themselves in field goal position plenty this game.
I cannot believe that we're on the radio and we're talking about kickers.
And it's a huge job.
I know, it's like with a these top two 10 teams, he's the first guy you asked me about.
Yeah, exactly.
Jason.
I was just surprised with all of the offensive weapons. Like, obviously, you see the over-unders with the running backs and their rushing yards, with the receiving and the options there. That a kicker bet, with all the attention, I mean, if you look at the playoffs so far, you're a man who's watched it. How many games have come down to that last kick? You think we got a chance of seeing that again here?
It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, I definitely think there's a chance. I mean, the past two rounds have been just fantastic with these, with these last drive type wins. So, I mean, I definitely could see it coming down to either, McPherson or Matt Gay on the Rams side.
All right. So the football part of it, always fascinates me because people don't, I don't think, realize how much goes into coming up with a number. But mm-hmm. what confuses me is the mm-hmm. ones that are non-football related. Like, how exactly does someone go about evaluating how long the national anthem is or how many times Snoop Dogg is or is not going to take a puff on stage? Like, let's start with the national anthem. What kind of research can you do to make sure to give like a reasonable estimate of how long the national anthem is going to take?
Yeah, so it's a great question. You know, these types of bets, not exactly my cup of tea, but I'll dabble just for the fun of it when it comes to the game. I mean, with the anthem, I mean, people will go back and analyze previous, you know, national anthems at Super Bowls or big events, and whoever is performing the anthem, if they've done an anthem before and how long it takes. And then usually when it comes down to like the sound check that performer's doing, usually a day or 2 days beforehand, it'll get leaked at some point. It did last year where someone was right outside the stadium recording, I forget who performed the anthem, but recording whoever was performing. And I think it went clearly over whatever the line was. So everyone started hammering the over. So it's just, you know, it kind of comes down usually to inside information at the last second.
You know, another one that I'm sure not is your favorite, but seems to be, I mean, as I used to see, the most bet thing on the game is the coin flip, which is like it's all yeah. luck. But now I saw you can bet on the decision that the team makes after the coin flip. And 12 of the last yeah. 13 coin flip winners decided to defer, including 11 straight. Tell us about why everybody decides to bet on the coin flip and what the strategy is for deferring or not with your choice there if you're going to make that pick.
Look, people want, you know, if you want a quick, fast way to either, you know, make or lose money, I mean, the coin flip, that's it. I've heard stories about people, you know, in Vegas where, you know, there's just loud eruptions and people are outside thinking, oh no, the game has started. No, it's just the coin flip happened and people bet on it. I mean, it's just, you know, that's just, it's kind of like, you know, going to the roulette table, taking a spin. It's really just, you know, chance and just seeing how it unfolds. But yeah, when it comes down to the decision, I mean, you know, I think both teams would probably defer if they did win. So I definitely like that bet.
All right. I've got one that seems like a lock to me, but it's a good thing I don't drop my own money on this anymore. He's been one of our guests, Icky Woods, here on the show. There's a prop bet as to whether a player will pay tribute to Icky Woods by doing the Icky shuffle during a touchdown or celebratory moment. Somebody's going to do that on Cincinnati, right? I mean, come on.
I think they have to.
They have to.
Yeah. I don't know how you could. Yeah. I think like that has to have been a discussion within the Bengals locker room. You know, hey, if you score, you got to do this. So, yeah, I like that one.
All right.
Well, what if they modify it? Does it count? Like, what if they do a half Icky shuffle and something else? Like, what does that count as?
It's a great question. I don't know, you know, who at these sports books is deciding what constitutes an Icky shuffle or not, but I don't envy that person, you know?
So Jeff mentioned some of the ridiculousness of the halftime show prop bets, like will Snoop Dogg smoke on stage, or what will the first song be played, or what color will his shoes be, or will there be a wardrobe malfunction? Do you stay away from these halftime prop bets, or do you go and play those too?
Yeah, no, I usually stay away. I mean, anything that I can't really quantify, I tend to stay away from. So
I'll be honest,
I'm not hating on them.
I think you can quantify if Snoop Dogg's going to smoke on stage practically. So just saying.
yes, that's fair. That's fair. But yeah, you know, hey, they're fun. And you know, I think it's just people who want action for the entirety of the game. You know, they'll put a little money on those types of bets.
Yeah, but the real part of the game, the part that Jason, I, and you love is the sport. The actual game mm-hmm. itself. What goes into mm-hmm. or what went into coming up with like the line for the over under for the entire game? Like what are the main things that we should all be looking for?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's two relatively high powered offenses, which usually would yield a line in the 50s. But I do think that these teams tend to play a little slower pace, which is what brought down the line to I think it's right now sitting at 48 for the over under. You know, it really comes down to how you think this game will flow. I tend to think that, you know, even though these both defenses are good, especially the Rams defense, I do think it's going to come down to a close game in the fourth quarter, which usually would tip this towards the over. If it was more of a blowout, one team is probably going to get conservative towards the end and play really slow and deliberate and just kind of try to protect their lead. So I tend to lean towards the over on that, but you know, there's just a ton of factors to kind of analyze when you're going through a bet like that.
If we were going to say, tell our listeners one or two things they should look out for in game, I've seen the Cam Akers over under. I've seen Cooper Kupp's over under. Who are you looking out in terms of players and props for what somebody should look out for that they might be able to make a little bit on?
Yeah, sure. So two props that I've already played. Speaking of Cam Akers, I actually have the under on his rush attempts. So that line was 16.5 when I played it. Reason why I like the under, you know, he hasn't been quite effective coming back from injury. He's also a little banged up. You know, Sony Michel's going to mix in. Darrell Henderson is looking like he's going to play. He might mix in as well. And I, at the end of the day, I do think that Sean McVay is going to have, you know, Stafford throwing the ball a lot because, you know, that's kind of what their offense is predicated on, you know, Stafford and their excellent receiver. So I have the under on that one. And on the Bengals side, I know all the rage is Ja'Marr Chase. I actually like T. Higgins to go over 69.5 receiving yards. He's hit this in 9 of his last 12 games, maybe somewhat quietly. The last two games, he's actually led the Bengals in receiving yards and targets. So, you know, I think Jalen Ramsey might be shadowing Ja'Marr Chase, might not be. But either way, I think this is a good matchup for Higgins to kind of sneakily get, you know, upwards of 80 some odd yards.
We know how much Joe Burrow has come on this year and how exciting he's been and the numbers he's been putting up. What's the most fun one or the one that we should look at when it comes to if we're just watching Joe Burrow?
You know, one thing I like about Super Bowl quarterbacks is if you are a believer that, you know, you think the Bengals can win, which I definitely think can happen. I would put a little money on Joe Burrow to win MVP of the game. Because if they win, it's most likely on you know, the arm of Burrow. You know, receivers usually don't get much love for the MVP. I think, you know, if the Bengals are going to take this, Burrow's probably going to have 2-3 touchdown passes, and he's probably going to take home MVP. So you can get that, you know, at better than 2-1 odds. So that's a fun one, especially if you really, you know, are liking the Bengals to pull out the upset.
Wait, so you're thinking that Burrow has better odds to be the MVP than the kicker? Jason's going to be very disappointed.
You know, I will say if Evan McPherson winds up winning MVP, it probably wasn't the most fun game to watch. So I would be rooting for Burrow to take it. Yeah.
All right. Look, I'm not going to ask you about the Gatorade to end, but I did want to end on a non-football prop bet if I could. I'm sure you're somebody that's looking ahead to after we're here in Philly. The Ben Simmons, James Harden trade. Will you be looking for about a gazillion prop bets when Ben Simmons returns here on March 10th to play in Philadelphia for the first time, including how many free throws he misses and how much he gets booed?
Well, hey, if they offer it, yeah, I'll definitely be looking at it. It's going to be interesting. I mean, we'll see how he ramps up beforehand, but that, I mean, I think everyone has that date circled on the calendar right now to see, you know, that game, his return to Philly and the reception that, you know, your guys as fans will give him.
Oh, he's going to get a reception.
So if you're not, yeah, if you're not from Philadelphia, there's something, called the Frosty Freeze-Out. And when the opponent, the opposing team misses 2 free throws in a row, then all the fans get this Frosty the next day. We are in Philadelphia are all going to be waiting for you to put up that prop bet on whether or not there's going to be a Frosty given the day after that game.
And in fairness to you on that potential prop bet, yesterday when the trade went down, the Wells Fargo Center tweeted out on their account the date 3/10, and Wendy's replied to the tweet with a picture of a Frosty. So we've got Wendy's trolling these prop bets now for you out there. So, Doug, we really appreciate the time. Where can people follow along for you and see your latest things going into the game and then after that?
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. You follow me on Twitter at PropBetGuy and all my picks, as well as all of our analysts, picks, plays, props, parlays, pickswise.com. We have a huge Super Bowl hub, but we also do every sport every day. So check us out. Good resource for any better.
thank you so much for the time. Wish you best of luck with the bets and everybody else who's watching you, and let's hope for a good game.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Jeff, I know you're going to go place a lot of prop bets now, right?
Not happening.
No, it's no, not happening.
I think it's a lot of fun. It adds to the Super Bowl, but it's not me.
Yeah, I knew you weren't going to be the one. But I mean, I think $31 billion was the number, or some crazy number that will be bet.
Now,
is that
legal gambling, or is that an estimate of even the illegal gambling?
So it's $60 billion in wagers in 2021. They expect an estimated $7.61 billion to be on the line for the big game. So that's a lot of money and a lot of tax dollars for people. What are you looking forward to see? We got about 2 minutes left here in the game. In terms of winner game, I think you're worried about a blowout, right?
I am. For some reason, I just picture that we think that because of Joe Burrow, this game is going to be closer than it is. The Rams are better on both sides of the ball.
The Bengals line concerns me. I mean, Burrow got sacked 9 times in a playoff game already this season.
And that defense wasn't nearly as good as what you're going to see. You're going to have just these three pieces. You're going to have Von Miller on one side, and you're going to have Aaron Donald on the other side. That's two future Hall of Famers on the defensive line. And then you have a lockdown corner in Jalen Ramsey, who's going to go toe-to-toe with Ja'Marr Chase. So then what do you do if you're the Bengals?
I definitely think it's a challenge for the Bengals. Your thoughts on the fact that it may be very hot there, the conditioning of people. This is not an air-conditioned stadium. There is supposed to be a breeze that flows through, but there is an excessive heat warning, and it will be in the 80-plus at kickoff.
I'm not an architect, but when I heard that the stadium has no air conditioning in L.A., the stadium costs what, $2 billion?
Yes.
And somehow
HVAC
they
not
think,
included.
I know they said that it's environmentally conscious not to have it, but you're going to have a lot of people that might have heat stroke. Instead,
it could be very warm there for people. All right, your winning, losing pick. What do you think is going to happen?
I say Rams are going to win, and it's going to be 33-21.
I think the Rams are going to win.
Which means your kicker is not going to get any field goals.
I think the Rams. Oh, no. I think the kicker is definitely going to get field goals because they're going to bend but not break. I want the Bengals to win. I think the Rams will win. We'll see what happens next week. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.